You're listening to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is time to study the daily New Testament reading. Our guest pastor joining us by phone this morning, Pastor Timothy Apple from Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. Good morning, Pastor Apple.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us this morning. Looking forward to studying God's Word with you this morning. How are things at Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas?
We're surviving the heat right now. We got a little bit of a heat wave here in Texas, but God's grace is still good and still coming to His people here through word and sacrament, and we rejoice in those gifts together.
Well, thanks be to God for those gifts and the opportunity to gather around them to receive them joyfully there in Smithville. We are studying Acts chapter 21 today, verses 15 through 36. That's a pretty lengthy text. What would you like for us to know about it as we prepare to study this morning, Pastor?
Well, we did a little bit of a jump here in the daily lectionary.
Yes.
Yesterday, we were a few chapters earlier, and so just to kind of catch us up a little bit, some of the things we skipped over, there's a riot in Ephesus that happens at the end of chapter 19. Paul caused a little bit of trouble there because the silversmiths who were making idols of Artemis were upset that they were losing money, and so that had to be quelled. In Acts chapter 20, Paul continues his missionary journey, goes over into Macedonia, and then he's going to head back towards Jerusalem. At the end of Acts chapter 20, we have that long farewell address to the Ephesian elders that's familiar to many. And then here in chapter 21, Paul's continuing his journey back to Jerusalem, and that's where we're going to pick it up as Paul's just making that final leg to Jerusalem. And the thing that's caused a little bit of tension in the narrative right now is that Paul in chapter 20 and then a prophecy in chapter 21 have indicated that Paul's going to face some difficulty there in Jerusalem. He's going to face affliction. He's going to face imprisonment. And Paul continues to go forward despite that because he's committed to the spread of the gospel to the people there in Jerusalem and then to the larger world, which is where this imprisonment that we're going to see happen today in Jerusalem is going to take him. It's going to eventually get him to Rome where he'll testify to the gospel there. So that kind of picks us up to where we are in the story as we pick it up in verse 15.
We are studying the daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Timothy Apple from Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. We're in Acts chapter 21, verses 15 through 36. If you have a question or a comment today, give us a call or an email. The phone number 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. You can email us, KFUO at KFUO.org, as we're digging in. Acts chapter 21, verse 15, that's where we're starting today, right, Pastor?
Yes, sir.
All right. After these days, we got ready and went up to Jerusalem, and some of the disciples from Caesarea went with us, bringing us to the house of Mnason of Cyprus, an early disciple with whom we should lodge. All right, so after these days, got up, went on to Jerusalem, and some of the disciples from Caesarea went with us, bringing us to the house of Mnason of Cyprus. He was an early disciple, and that's where they lodged.
Right. So here we're picking up Paul's last leg of the journey from Caesarea up to Jerusalem, probably about a 70-mile journey that they're going. Just a few things to point out that notice that we still have the first person plural here, that after these days we got ready. So Luke is the author of Acts, is on the journey right here with Paul. And Paul's not alone. Back in chapter 20, there was about seven other guys that were mentioned who were coming along with Paul, probably as a part of bringing that collection for the poor that had been taken up along Paul's missionary journey. So they're coming back to Jerusalem. They're bringing that with them. And this is the last leg of the journey. And they're in, once they get to Jerusalem, they stay in the house of Mnason of Cyprus, an early disciple. Don't know a whole lot about him other than what the text says right there. The fact that he's an early disciple may mean that he was one of the original members of the Jerusalem church. But that's basically what we know about Mnason of Cyprus is right there in this text.
I like that name, Mnason. It's kind of like a mnemonic device, M-N-A.
So, yeah, yeah.
All right. Anything else before we go on to verse 17?
Right. So now Paul's in Jerusalem, and he's going to meet with the elders there, and that's going to carry the story forward.
All right, let's take a look. Verse 17. When we had come to Jerusalem, the brothers received us gladly. On the following day, Paul went in with us to James, and all the elders were present. After greeting them, he related one by one the things that God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. And when they heard it, they glorified God, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews of those who have believed. They are all zealous for the law, and they have been told about you, that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or walk according to our customs. What then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you have come. Do therefore what we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. Take these men and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads. Thus all will know that there is nothing in what they have been told about you, but that you yourself also live in observance of the law. But as for the Gentiles who have believed, we have sent a letter with our judgment that they should abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols, and from blood, and from what has been strangled, and from sexual immorality." Then Paul took the men, and the next day he purified himself along with them and went into the temple, giving notice when the days of purification would be fulfilled and the offering presented for each one of them. All right, so when they had come to Jerusalem, the brothers received us gladly. And the following day, Paul went with us to James, and all the elders were present. And greeting them, he related one by one the things that God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry.
The picture that I have here is kind of, in modern-day terms, you know, when a missionary comes home and visits a congregation that's been supporting them. That's kind of the picture of joy that we have here with Paul coming back to Jerusalem with his companions. They come there, and they're received gladly by the church. There's much joy in Paul's return and then these brothers who have accompanied him. And then the next day, Paul goes in to meet the leaders of the church. James here is the half-brother of Jesus, one of the leaders in the early church. We've heard about him elsewhere in the book of Acts, especially in chapter 15 in the Council of Jerusalem. And so Paul, on coming to Jerusalem, goes to James and the rest of the leaders, the other elders of the church, and he greets them. And then he begins to tell them what God's been doing through his ministry, just as he's done previously on other returns from missionary journeys. He tells the church, this is what God has been doing through the ministry. And I think that's a big point to make there in verse 19, that Paul says to the church, these are the things that God has been doing among the Gentiles. You know, the title of the book is The Acts of the Apostles, officially, mm-hmm. and yet it really is the acts of the triune God. And Paul's clear on that what Paul's been doing is not Paul, but this is the Lord working through Paul, reaching the Gentiles through his ministry. And then the response in verse 20 is exactly the same. James and the elders hear this good news, and they glorify God. What wondrous news that God has been working among the Gentiles through Paul and his missionary journey.
And when they heard it, they glorified God, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many thousands there are among the Jews of those who have believed. They are all zealous for the law, and they have been told about you, that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or walk according to our customs. What then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you have come."
Right. So they've heard Paul's report. They give thanks to God for what God is doing among the Gentiles. And then they let Paul know about a situation that's developed. And the tone changes a little bit, but it's still one of care and concern and working towards the spread of the gospel. So James and the elders of the Jerusalem church inform Paul, and they tell him as a brother, they remind him, you know, remember how many thousands there are here among Jews who believed. You think back to Acts chapter 2 and 4 with Pentecost and the time right after there, how we're told of these thousands upon thousands who are believing. And these are Jews, Israelites, who have the Old Testament and have come to believe that Jesus, the Christ, is the fulfillment of all of that. And so they remind Paul, remember how many thousands there are of these Jews who have believed. And they remind him also they are zealous for the law. And zealous for the law in the sense that they're living according to Jewish customs, not that they're trying to earn their salvation by the law. But they still circumcise their children. They still eat clean foods. They do these things that are important about living as a Jew, not trying to save themselves, but culturally. And so they're zealous for the law, and yet they're hearing these reports about Paul, that he's teaching Jews among Gentiles to forsake all that, that they can't circumcise their children, that they can't eat clean foods. And so these reports are obviously false. Earlier in the book of Acts, they've dealt with the question, do Gentiles have to become Jews in order to be Christians? Chapter 15. And the answer was no. A Gentile does not have to circumcise himself or his children in order to be a Christian. So what happens from that then is as the gospel spreads among the Gentiles, much of the Christian church is Gentile and then not living according to Jewish customs. And so probably some of the Jewish brothers then, in order to be in the Gentile community of Christians there, may have given up some of this Jewish way of life, not because they had to, but just for the unity of the church. And so some of these reports perhaps are coming back to Jerusalem, and people are getting the wrong idea about Paul there, that he's saying you can't circumcise your children, you can't eat clean foods. And that's of course not what Paul is teaching. And so the elders here in Jerusalem tell Paul about this, and they say to him, you know, this is causing quite a bit of trouble here, and what can we do about it? The idea being probably that they've tried to put these reports aside and yet are having trouble. And so now that Paul is here, people are going to know that he's here, and he has an opportunity to prevent this from becoming an obstacle to the spread of the gospel, which is what Paul wants to do. Is that where we stopped? Do we get to verse 22? I don't think we read verse 23 yet.
We have, you're right. We haven't gotten to 23 yet.
I don't want to get ahead of myself. Okay.
Verse 23, do therefore what we tell you. We have four men who are under a vow. Take these men and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads. Thus all will know that there is nothing in what they have been told about you, but that you yourself also live in observance of the law. But as for the Gentiles who have believed, we have sent a letter with our judgment that they should abstain from what has been sacrificed to idols and from blood and from what has been strangled and from sexual immorality. So let's pause there before Paul goes on.
Okay, so here's the suggestion that that James and the leaders of the Jerusalem church have for Paul. They have four men in their congregation who are under a vow. Back in Numbers chapter 6, we hear about the Nazarite vow, a vow that a person could take as a way to give thanks to God for a variety of reasons. And among the things that would happen during the time of the vow, they were not to drink any alcohol, they were not to cut their hair, they were to stay away from the dead. Famous Nazarites in the Bible include Samson and John the Baptist, for example. And so in the Jerusalem church, there's four men who are under this Nazarite vow. And again, that's not contrary to being a Christian. They're not placing their hope in that. This is just part of the Jewish culture that they've grown up in. And so the suggestion of James and the elders of the Jerusalem church is for Paul then to be the patron for these men, not to place himself under the vow, but to pay their expenses. And along with paying their expenses for it would involve going to the temple, being purified by one of the priests there. And this was going to show then that Paul was not against the Jewish lifestyle culturally. As long as people weren't saying that you had to be circumcised to be saved, that's where Paul drew the line with the Judaizers and Galatians. But circumcision in and of itself, if a person wanted to do that, he could. But to say that you had to do it to be saved, that's where Paul would draw the line. And that line's not being drawn here. So Paul is willing to go do this in order to show that he does care about the gospel being spread to these Jews, to his countrymen. Think of Romans chapter 9 where Paul is just yearning that more of his fellow Israelites would hear the gospel of Jesus Christ and be saved. And he says in 1 Corinthians 9 that to the Jews he became like a Jew to win more of them. And Paul is putting that into practice right here. And then James and the elders, they add verse 25 about the Gentiles who have believed and the letter that they sent, going back to Acts 15, to remind Paul and themselves that they're not reopening an old question. They're not saying that Gentiles have to become Jews in order to be saved here. That question has been settled according to God's word, and that's not being reopened. What is at question here is whether Jews living according to a Jewish way of life can be saved. And the answer is, as long as they're not doing it to try to save themselves by works of the law, yes, they can live this way. And that's what Paul's going to show by his actions here.
Verse 26, then Paul took the men, and the next day he purified himself along with them and went into the temple, giving notice when the days of purification would be fulfilled and the offering presented for each one of them. So he followed through.
He did. He did. He followed through. And just one quick point that he puts himself at risk by doing this. You know, back in Acts chapter 20, at the beginning of 21, you know, we have this indication that something bad is going to happen to Paul, affliction and imprisonment. And yet Paul's not concerned about that to hinder the spread of the gospel. Paul puts himself out there in the open, at risk for those things, but he's doing it because he wants the gospel to be spread. And I think that's an important point to see right there.
Anything else up through verse 26 before we take a look at the rest of the text?
I think we can keep going.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick pause, actually. We'll take a quick break. Okay. When we come back from the break, we'll take a look at verses 27 through 36. We're studying with Pastor Timothy Apple from Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. If you have a question or a comment on our text today, Acts chapter 21, give us a call or an email, 314-821-0850, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us, kfuo@kfuo.org. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO.
It just might be that you know someone who is aging gracefully but needs a bit of assistance. Perhaps you are looking for a doctor to make a house visit on your mom, or a handyman to fix an elderly neighbor's sink. Or maybe you think your dad qualifies for veterans benefits, but you just aren't sure. Aging Answers is a free service sponsored by Lutheran Senior Services. Make it your go-to source for aging-related concerns. LSS Aging Answers, 314-446-2475.
Hi, this is Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. We are excited to walk alongside Lutheran Church Missouri Synod members and ministries as they witness and perform works of mercy and compassion around the world. Investments with LCEF provide the exceptional financial resources used daily to build faith communities and serve God's people. Our loans and ministry support services are available to LCMS congregations, schools, and organizations, as well as rostered church workers. Visit LCEF today.
Welcome back to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. We are studying the daily New Testament reading with the Reverend Timothy Apple, pastor at Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. We are in Acts chapter 21 today, verses 15 through 36. Time to pick up at verse 27. When the 7 days were almost completed, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who is teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law and this place. Moreover, he even brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place." For they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple. Then all the city was stirred up, and the people ran together. They seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and at once the gates were shut. And as they were seeking to kill him, word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. He at once took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them, and when they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. Then the tribune came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. He inquired who he was and what he had done. Some in the crowd were shouting one thing, some another, and as he could not learn the facts because of the uproar, he ordered them to be brought into the barracks. And when he came to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the crowd. And for the mob of the people followed, crying out, "Away with him." So 7 days were completed. The Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, "Men of Israel, help! This is the man who is teaching everyone everywhere against the people and the law and this place. And he brought Greeks into the temple and defiled this holy place." Pastor?
So, Paul's just about finished being the patron to these four men who are completing the vow. The 7 days are almost completed. And yet, as we mentioned earlier, you know, what Paul's doing is public. And so his enemies have a chance to take advantage of that, and they do. Some of the Jews from Asia saw him in the temple. And these Jews from Asia, probably some from Ephesus, where Paul spent a good chunk of his ministry, had followed him. Or perhaps they were there celebrating Pentecost. We have indication that Paul was trying to get to Jerusalem ahead of time for Pentecost, and so it's possible that they're in Jerusalem for Pentecost as well. And they recognize who Paul is here in the temple. And so they point him out to the crowd, and they stir the crowd up so that the crowd lays hands on Paul. They're going to do something about Paul. And the accusations against him are twofold. They cry out, "Men of Israel, help." First, they have a very wide accusation, right? This is the guy that you've been hearing about, the one that's been apostatizing from Moses. It's here he is right here, and they accuse him of teaching against the people. Teaching against the people of Israel, teaching against the law, against the customs of Moses, and against this place, against the temple. And then they have a very specific accusation on top of that. Not only is he generally doing all these things, but also right here, right now, he's brought Greeks in with him. And the temple courts were divided so that into the outer courts, Gentiles could come. But into the inner courts, into the holiest parts of the temple, Gentiles were not allowed to come. And there was a sign there at that division indicating so, written in Greek and in Latin. And actually, it decreed death for those who would violate that that statute of bringing Gentiles into the innermost part. And so these men come and they accuse Paul of that, and it just stirs the whole crowd up.
And then, from there, after they share this, he's got everybody all riled up by bringing in Greeks. They had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, and they supposed that Paul had brought him into the temple, and then all the city was stirred up, and the people ran together. They seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and at once the gates were shut.
Right. So Luke notes that the reason they thought Paul maybe had brought a Greek into the temple is because they had seen Trophimus the Ephesian. And again, these Jews from Asia, likely from Ephesus, would have recognized Trophimus from Ephesus. And they had seen Trophimus walking around Jerusalem with Paul, and so they just assumed that Paul must have brought him into the temple as well. And that's what, you know, what hate will do to someone, is they'll lead them to make these sort of assumptions. And of course, the assumption wasn't true, but they thought it was, and they convinced the crowd that it was. And so this then got all of the city stirred up. The people ran together. They grab Paul. They drag him out of the temple, and the temple police shut the gate. So probably what happens here is that they drag Paul out of the inner courts and into the outer courts, and the gates are shut to prevent any further rioting in the holiest parts of the temple, and to prevent any defilement in the holiest parts of the temple.
And as they were seeking to kill him, word came to the tribune of the cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. He at once took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them, and when they saw the tribune and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul.
So the Roman fortress, Antonia, was on the northwest corner of the Temple Mount. The fortress had actually been built by Herod the Great, and so it rested above the temple, and there, from there, they could overlook the temple and much of the city and watch out for these sorts of riots. And that's exactly what they see from this fortress. And so the tribune of the cohort, one of the commanders of a thousand there in that fortress, hears that Jerusalem is in confusion, a riot is happening, and so he acts at once. And he takes soldiers and centurions. It doesn't say exactly how many, but it is plural. So a centurion is a leader of 100 men, and so there's at least two of them. So we're talking potentially around 200 soldiers here that the Tribune brings down with him to quell this riot. And so you can kind of imagine, you know, the crowd here rioting and beating up Paul, then all of a sudden here comes these 200 soldiers. Well, they back off pretty quick with that kind of show of force.
Then the Tribune came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. He inquired who he was and what he had done. Ordered him to be bound with two chains, not just one.
Right, yeah. Perhaps one for the hands and one for the feet. Not in such a way that Paul couldn't walk. But you know, yeah, he's not going anywhere is the idea that we have here. So then the Tribune starts to ask, well, you know, who is this guy? Naturally, you know, there's one guy that the attention is centering around, and so he must be the troublemaker. So the Tribune comes and arrests him. And the Tribune that we have here in verse 33 becomes a reasonably important character in the story of Acts here for the next couple of chapters. Now, we find out later in Acts chapter 23 that his name is Claudius Lysias, and he begins to come to a greater understanding of who Paul is. We see his confusion that we have right here. It comes to a little bit greater clarity as the narrative continues in the book of Acts, and we'll see that over the coming days.
Some in the crowd were shouting one thing, some another, and as he could not learn the facts because of the uproar, he ordered him to be brought into the barracks. There's just chaos.
Exactly, right. And so the Tribune is trying to make sense of this whole situation, and he's talking to this huge crowd that was just in an uproar, and as soon as they get the chance to start, you know, saying what they think's going on, they do, and there's one side over here and another side over here and all kinds of things that are being shouted at the Tribune at this point. And so he's not going to learn anything because of this uproar. So he withdraws, he brings his soldiers, and he brings Paul back into the fortress.
And when they came to the steps, he was actually carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the crowd, for the mob of the people followed crying out, "Away with him."
Yeah, so and Luke reminds us just how bad this really was getting. You know, so bad that Paul had to be physically carried by the soldiers because otherwise the crowd was going to drag him back, apparently. And the mob that was following was crying out, "Away with him," which ought to ring a little bit familiar in our ears as we think back to Jesus' passion. You know, "Away with him, crucify him." The people are calling for the Tribune to kill Paul. Just as they, not the same, but just as the crowd once called out for Pilate to crucify Jesus, "Away with him, crucify him." And so we have Paul following in the footsteps of his Lord here.
Looking over the text as a whole today, Pastor, what would you like for us to learn from this text overall as a whole? That I know we've gone through and looked at it verse by verse or concept by concept, but is there anything that an overarching theme or message throughout this whole text?
Sure, and it might be a little bit challenging to see because it really is. It's a lot of narrative, and you know, it's not like an epistle where we have, you know, bits of you know, doctrine here and here and here. It's a narrative. So what do we glean from this narrative? And as I was considering that, you know, I think there's two things that we really see from Paul. One is we see his care for his care and concern that his fellow Israelites would believe that Jesus is the Christ of the Old Testament. And we see that as he agrees to do this, to be the patron for these four men who are under the vow. He shows that he is the apostle to the Gentiles, but he has such a great care and concern for his fellow Israelites, you know, the ones who had all the promises from the Old Testament, that they would believe those promises and believe Christ. And so we get a wonderful example of Paul's missionary zeal here to reach out to his own people and to do as he says in 1 Corinthians 9, you know, "To the Jews I became a Jew in order to win Jews." And later in that same section, you know, he says, "I do it all for the sake of the gospel that I may share with them in its blessing." So we get to see Paul's missionary zeal for his own people in this text. And then the second thing that I think we should see from this text as well is Paul's zeal for the gospel in the face of opposition. You know, the context that precedes this text is very much, you know, Paul is going towards affliction and imprisonment. And in fact, the text that we've just read is the last time that we got to see a free Paul in the book of Acts. And Paul knows that's coming from his own experience, and he knows it's coming from prophecies outside of him. And yet, he still does everything that he can to spread the gospel at this moment in time, and he allows himself to go into this situation where he knows imprisonment and affliction is likely so that he can continue to spread the gospel, which I think is a fantastic thing for us to hear in our world today, that even as we see the possibilities of affliction or imprisonment becoming more and more likely, that we have the gospel of Jesus Christ. And to speak that in the world is the greatest privilege that we have and the greatest opportunity that we have. And so let's follow Paul's footsteps here and speak it proudly and speak it boldly, so that more might come to faith, more might join us in this church, rejoicing in Christ's gifts and receiving them and sharing them with the world. And so that's what I would say that we can get from this text today.
Very good. We've been studying the Daily New Testament reading today with Pastor Timothy Apple from Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. Pastor Apple, thanks so much for being our guest pastor. Anything new or anything coming up at Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville?
Oh, let's see. Well, this weekend our men are cooking the beans for Camp Lone Star, which is just down the road. Lutheran Outdoor Ministries of Texas has a camp right over just 20 miles away from us in LaGrange, and they have their annual barbecue. And so our men cook the beans, and other churches provide other parts of the. So we've got that going on this week, and looking forward to helping them out and supporting their ministry over there.
Very good. Oh, that's outstanding. Well, I hope that that God continues to provide for you as you endure the heat.
Thank you. We'll do our best to stay cool.
Thanks. God bless you and all the saints there at Grace Lutheran Church in Smithville, Texas. Coming up in just a little bit, Creation Club with Pastor Wirth. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.